Morning. Today's daf in Chulin is daf Hey. We are starting today, mamish, on the top of the Amud on Hey Amud Aleph. We are in the middle of an incident and a proof. The Gemara quoted yesterday in the middle of Gimel Amud Beis, Dal Amud Beis, that Rav Anan Amar Shmuel says of the opinion that Yisrael Mamalav is Kochavim Yerolati from Ishchita. Meaning to say as follows, we've been discussing who can and who cannot check. The first question of the Masechta, going all the way back to Daf Beis Amud Aleph, is who's available for Shechita, who can check? And the Mishnah says, Hakol, everyone can check, Hakol Shochtin. And what we dealt with in the first two Dapim of the Masechta, on Daf Beis and on Daf Gimel, is the tension between the Hakol Shochtin versus the Shechita Sankshera. First the Mishnah starts off with Chatzchila, then the Mishnah transitions into Bidiyavid. And how do we deal with that? And the Gemara gave six approaches amongst the Amoraim how to deal with that. But in other words, but basically, we see that more people than you thought would be able to shech. So who's that more people coming to include? So according to both Abaye and Rava, is one of the two of the six opinions that we saw. So it comes to include a kusi is in a position where he can shech. And we discussed at length yesterday's daf as well. The ability of a kusi to shech. He's somebody who the conversion may or may not be good. We'll talk more about that actually in today's daf, tomorrow's daf as well. A lot of discussion of kusi in the beginning of the first parak of Chulin, but understandably, and based on the context, we totally understand why. But that's one understanding that we're talking about a kusi. And yesterday, as well as the first two daf, and we also talked about a mumar. So somebody who's not a believer, someone who doesn't believe in the mitzvahs. Now, there are two types of mumar, and I know we're oversimplifying, but there are two types of mumar. There's a mumar lahachis and a mumar l'teavon. Mumar lahachis means that imamish has a religious agenda. He's against the Kaddish Baruch Hu, and religiously he's voicing his protest. So by not doing mitzvahs, so that's a mumar lahachis. And then there's a mumar l'teavon. Mumar l'teavon, there's not much philosophy going on over here. It's just that he has the Yetzer Hara, and inconvenience gets the best of him, or the worst of him. And so if something is going to be causing him effort and energy, and he doesn't want to expend that effort and energy, so he's going to eat treif. But it has nothing to do with a religious battle against the Kaddish Baruch Hu. So there's a mumar lahachis and a mumar l'teavon. Fine. Now, we discussed yesterday, what if it's a mumar l'davar echad? What if it's mumar but only for one mitzvah? So we said that's certainly not going to put him in the category of an ovei kochavim. He certainly will be able to shecht. Again, we're assuming mumar l'teavon, not mumar lahachis. Mumar lahachis already puts him in a position where that's it. He's out of the discussion. Right? It's if it's a mumar lahachis and what? Mumar lahachis and davar echad, no good. So the no good. And Tosos, if you want to see it inside, Tosos is the second to last on the Amud. It's a very short Tosos, but very, very punctuated and very clear, right? In other words, it goes without saying that if he saw a mumar lahachis even on one mitzvah, so that then there's no discussion, right? Tosos says that obviously is no good. So if it's a mumar l'davar echad, so then he's no good. What if it's a mumar l'davar echad regarding Achilas kashas, meaning it just happens to be that the one mitzvah that he's weak on is the mitzvah of eating kosher. Can he shecht? So it's really interesting. Rava said, and we're going to see his statement again. Rava said, yeah, he could shecht. You got to make sure the knife you give him is a clean knife, and you know the words, so that there's no, he's not going to have to make any kind of any extra efforts in order to kasher the knife. Kasher the knife, meaning not right. Not the classic koshering, but in other words, make sure the knife has no pagam in it. But outside of that, you can have him shecht. It's a really interesting comment by Rava, which we're going to see again today, but that's fine. But anyway, mumar l'davar echad, we said, is okay. Rav Anan goes one step further. Let's say it's mumar l'davar echad, but let's say that davar echad happens to be avodah zarah. Okay. Now, we're going to see over the course of today's daf, it's going to be one of the main discussions of today's daf. If it's avodah zarah, which he's weakened, so that's ki'ilu, he's kofer b'kola tarah kula. In other words, avodah zarah is a backbreaker. We know throughout all of Shas, avodah zarah is like one of the premier averus in the Torah. It's emblematic of the fact that the person is not a mamin in the Kaddish Baruch Hu. And like avodah zarah, it's like sticks out like a sore thumb in terms of the averus in the Torah. So that's generally speaking the way we view it, the way the Gemara views it. And our Gemara is not going to be any different. However, Rav Anan has a tremendous chiddush. Rav Anan says that if it's a mumar l'davar echad and it happens to be avodah zarah, the person can shecht. It's fine. Allow the person to shecht. That's the opinion of Rav Anan. And what the Gemara was doing started yesterday, and we're going to continue to today's daf, is see if we could support that statement to Rav Anan. Is it a supportable statement that when the person is a mumar for avodah zarah, Okay, obviously not the best situation, but he can shecht. So what we started with yesterday is analyzing an incident in Navi, specifically that between Yehoshaphat and Achav. Yehoshaphat was the Melech Yehuda, and Achav was Melech Yisrael. Achav was not a good king, and I'm being kind when I say that. So Achav was an Ovid of Avodah Zarah. He was also involved in Shvichas Damim. Okay, that I can say for sure. Okay. So he was not good. But for the time being, what we need to know is that he was Ovid of Avodah Zarah. And as the Gemara said in yesterday's daf, we're going to have to assume that everyone in his palace also was Ovid of Avodah Zarah. Meaning he's not hiring people who are monotheistic in nature. That's just generally the trend. The kings in Ovid of Avodah Zarah, everyone in his palaces, including all the way you go down to the kitchen, and they in the kitchen also Ovid of Avodah Zarah. So we have to assume that the people shechting for him are also Ovid of Avodah Zarah. And yet we know that Yehoshaphat ate from that shechita. So the Gemara says over there, so that seems to be good proof that if you're a mummer, even if it's for Avodah Zarah, so you can eat from their shechita. That was the proof the Gemara wanted to give yesterday. And the Gemara tried, you know, to suggest that it's not a definitive proof, meaning it could be that maybe Yehoshaphat's people shechted for him and not Achav's people that shechted for him. Could be, but the Gemara says it's improbable. And here we're going to pick it up on the very bottom of the Amud and Dal Amud Beis, where the Gemara tries to make such a suggestion. The Vidilma, right? Last lines of the Amud Beis. Vidilma zavuch gavrei d'achav achal achav v'gavrei. Zavuch gavrei d'yoshafat achal yoshafat v'gavrei. So here the Gemara makes, in fact, exactly that suggestion. So maybe Achav and his people shechted for his people. Maybe Yehoshaphat and his people shechted for his people. And so Yehoshaphat had a kosher shochet. A non-Ovid Avodah Zarah shochet, meaning one of his own people. And maybe that's the way to understand the story. And again, the proof is not a definitive proof that would support Rav Hanan. So the Gemara says on the top of Daf Hei Amud Aleph, Lo hava maflag nafshei minei. Now, in other words, there was a kind of relationship that existed between Yehoshaphat and Achav, which we're going to describe a little bit better in just a couple of moments from now, where we know that they wouldn't segregate from each other in that manner, where they would have separate meals, separate shochtim. In other words, they were a unified front, Achav and Yehoshaphat. How do we know that? Minalan, Ilem emidichsiv kamon kamocha kami kamcha. Because when reading the psukim in the Navi, describing the pact that existed between the two kings, so the wording of the pasuk seems to be very complementary to one another. Right, kamon kamocha. Right, I'm like you, kami kamech. Your nation, my nation, we're like one. Right, it's reminiscent of the kind of discussion that Ruth and Naomi had. Right, we're totally together. The Gemara says, "Elam yata kisusi kisusecha." So the Gemara says, "Well, I'm not really sure that that's describing a social relationship. It could very well be that it's just simply describing I'll call it a business relationship, but in other words, a more professional relationship. Consider because political. It's better stated. A political relationship because look, also it talks about how your horses and my horses are going to meet the same fate. Okay, in other words, if we're talking about our horses, clearly this is not a social relationship. This is a partnership. It's a political partnership, an alliance. It just simply means that we are creating a pact with one another. Whatever political problems you have are my political problems, and conversely the same. And so over here, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be eating together. So the Gemara does not see this as the absolute proof that they did have, in fact, such a kind of social relationship where it's muchrach, where it's evident that Yehoshaphat has to be eating from Achav's table. So the Gemara says, yeah, but there are other psukim, and the Gemara goes over them. So here in this pasuk, same parak in the Navi, in Malachim Aleph, so in this pasuk it sounds like they were sitting together, it doesn't sound like. They were sitting together, meluvashim begadim begaren, Pesach Shar Shomron. And they were begaren, they were in the granary. Now, two kings in the granary, right? No, of course not. Meaning they're not sitting in the granary together, but rather, my goren, ilay megoren ma'amishatu shar shomron, goren hava, is being described as Shar Shomron. Whenever we see the word shar, so it literally translates as the gate, but it doesn't mean the gate, right? The shar usually means some sort of important facility. Usually it's referenced to a judicial system, right? It's a courtroom. But in other words, the Shar is an important area where Yehoshaphat and Achav are sitting together. So, and what does Goren mean? What does it normally mean in the context of Halacha? Elaki Goren did none. Sanhedrin Isaac Kechazi Goren Agula Kideshi Roen Zedze. So we know how the Sanhedrin sits. They sit like a granary, meaning the configuration is semicircular, so that everyone gets to see one another. And Rashi over here, really interesting Rashi. Rashi over here says Kigaren. So Kigaren hayu yoshim b'teva. Sorry, let me read that Rashi correctly. I'm going to correct myself. Kigaren hayu yoshim b'chiba uvereus uve aguda echad ke Sanhedrin she'en choshin zedzeh. Just like we have members of Sanhedrin who are not choshed one another, everybody is facing one another. So, and in a semicircular fashion, so to, and with love and affection and admiration for one another, yes, of course, they're going to argue with one another, and they may disagree with one another. But the configuration is such where it will promote a kind of relationship that they have with one another. So therefore, same thing over here. We have, when the Navi is describing that Achav and Yehoshaphat are sitting in that kind of configuration, so there was Chiba Vereus. They liked one another. And of course, when eating from each other's palace, at each other's palace, they're going to be sharing food with one another. So the Gemara says, so from here it seems to be a pretty good proof that we have Yehoshaphat eating in the palace of Achav. And right now, the Gemara is assuming that Achav is an Oved Avodah Zarah. That's a good assumption. We have now the Gemara assuming that Yehoshaphat ate from the Shechita of Achav. Another, now, what seems to be reasonable assumption. And so therefore, what we have is a good proof for Rav Hanan. Another interesting point of Rashi over here is that why semicircular? Meaning, why not the full circle in terms of a configuration? Rashi writes, the next Rashi, Shiron Zed Zeh, Leo Shomim Ishut Chavero, Umizvachim Zeh Im Zeh. Everyone gets to hear one another. They argue with one another. Good. Ache Teitzeh Arak Halacha. And what's going to happen is that after a healthy discussion and healthy debate, we're going to arrive at a conclusion. She'ila yayoshim kishura shalo ba'agula ein b'nei rosh shura roen b'nei sof shura so. So as far as sitting in a single file, so, I mean, Rashi spells it out. I mean, it's kind of self-evident at this point in time that you don't want that because you can't see one another. You're sitting at one end, I'm sitting at the other end, I don't see you, I hear you, I don't see you. That's no good. In other words, everyone has to see one another, everyone has to hear one another. Uche agula shlema lohayu yoshin kideshi emakam lasis vlavo. And then Rashi says, from the most pragmatic standpoint, you know why it's semicircular? No, you know why it's not a full circle? Because we need the Adam to walk in order to testify. And if it's a full circle, so where is it going in? Okay, so semicircular. So that way we have people being able to come in and out of the Sanhedrin to be able to testify in front of the Sanhedrin. Okay. Lema misayele. We're back in the Gemara. We're about a quarter of the way down. First one in the line is Shiyahu. And the Gemara now is going to try to bring a proof for Rav Hanan. Now, it's interesting. The Gemara is going to try to bring a proof for Rav Hanan. Didn't we just finish a proof for Rav Hanan? And the answer is yes, we did. Meaning, but at the same time, however, it is not absolutely muchrach, meaning we're putting a bunch of assumptions together. And so the previous proof, as good as it is, but it's not absolute, we could still argue. In other words, it doesn't state very clearly that that's right, Yehoshaphat ate from the meat of Achav. It doesn't say it with absolute clarity. So the Gemara seeks to find now another proof. Okay, so we're actually not going to go that far off in the Navi. We're going to still stay in Melachim Aleph. Previously, we were in Perek Chav Beis. Now we're moving back to Perek Yizayin. In Perek Yizayin, so Eliyahu Navi declared a fast. He was very unhappy with Achav and the Nevi'ei Habaal. And so he declared a fast and He declared a famine. That famine extended for 3 years. Now, as far as Eliyahu is concerned, so he had to go into hiding. Achav was looking for Eliyahu, looking for him to kill him. And so he had to go into hiding. So he hid for a very long time. And as far as food is concerned, so he got room service. Now, who provided him the room service? The Kadosh Baruch Hu. How did he provide the room service? So he had a couple of ravens come over every day, twice a day, to bring him food. Okay? We're not that far off from manna from heaven, but over here, not as miraculous. The only thing is that the waiters that brought it to him were a pair of ravens. Two meals a day, where do the meals come from? Okay, so that's the next part of the Gemara. So it came from the kitchen of Achav. All right, Achav's kitchen. So the food is provided from Achav's kitchen, delivered from the raven to Eliyahu Navi every day. So that already now seemingly is another good proof that despite the fact that Achav was an Oved Avodah Zarah and the members of the kitchen were as well, and so, but nevertheless, Eliyahu ate the food. So the Gemara has an approach, and the Gemara says, Al Pi Adibur Shani. So the Gemara says, yes, that's true, but it's done al pi adibur. What does that mean, it's done al pi adibur? So it's an interesting Rashi and Tosos, which is pretty much how I would have explained the Gemara, but it's more important that Rashi explains it this way. Al pi adibur shani Rashi shakash baruch hu hitiro lefi shah dichtiv esar avon tivasi sham lekalkalacha. So Rashi over here says al pi adibur, meaning lemaisa it was treif. It wasn't good. Meaning that the shochtim were over the avodah zarah and the meat is not good, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a special dispensation to Eliyahu Hanavi to be able to eat it. Tosfos concurs with such a pshat. You see the Tosfos on the top of the Amud, Api Adi Bershani. V'im Tamar Lamai Desak Adachad Elohavi Api Adi Bor Tikshay Dahamar Av Basar Shin Asam Anam Ayin Asar. For a moment we thought in the Gemara, for a moment we thought that it was, that was not Api Adi Bor. Meaning that Eliyahu Hanavi was eating food which was unacceptable. But which, by the way, in the conclusion of the Gemara, it is unacceptable, but there was a special heter. But Tosha says, even the Havamina. So we're going to see a halacha much later in the Masechta, much later. But we're going to see a halacha of what's called Basar Shin Asalim in Ayin. That's the halacha that when meat goes unsupervised, open and unsupervised, and there were non-Jews in the presence in that area, so that's what's called Basar Shin Asalim in Ayin. Whenever you have meat being delivered from a restaurant or a catering facility over to somebody else, and the delivery is a non-Jew, so the meat has to be stamped, packaged, whatever. In other words, labeled so that we know that this is the same meat that came from that facility to this location. Otherwise, it falls under the category Basar Shin Asalim in Ayin. So over here, you're having meat being delivered from Achav's kitchen over to Eliyahu. So Tosfos points out, we already know it's unacceptable. Now granted, Basar Shin Asalim in Ayin is not an Isser Min HaTorah. Meaning, having somebody unacceptable shechting the carbon. Sorry, I'm back in Zvachim. I'm back in Menachos. If you have somebody unacceptable shechting, so there we're touching on the issue of a nevela. Meaning, if the shechita is not a good shechita, the animal's a nevela. Over here, Basar Shin Asalim in Ayin. So seemingly, that's a rabbinic concern. That's not Isser Min HaTorah. But still, Tosfos's point is that's unacceptable. In other words, not allowed to eat Basar Shin Asalim in Ayin. So Tikshi, the Tosfos says, the Hamarab Basar Shin Asalim in Ayin Aser. The Kamen V'Yishlamer Dizeha Yodesha Yasamecha Pi Adibor. The Lav Mishal V'Kocham V'Kamaisi. So okay, fine. So in other words, if it were just Basar Shin Asalim in Ayin, so Eliyahu Navi says, look, I know that's unacceptable. I know it's wrong, but on the scale of things, okay. So I'll get a special dispensation. But to go one step further, meaning meat that was shechted by unacceptable people, Ovid of Avodah Zarah, and that should be acceptable? So that, Tosfos says, that was the Havamina of the Gemara. That's why, for a moment, the Gemara thought Eliyahu was not going to eat that. And the Alpi Adibor is coming to tell us, no, even that there's a special dispensation for Eliyahu Navi that he was allowed to eat it.
Question is the fact that Hashem could have provided the infinite ways of giving the right food for him.
Right.
And also, reading that Hashem protects Tzaddikim from...
Okay, so Hedy's asking strong questions. They're really, really strong questions, right? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is providing the food via miracle, why go to Achav's kitchen and why get it from Achav's kitchen? Why not go somewhere else?
Wouldn't that mean that it's kosher?
Okay, so again, I could hear the argument. The Gemara is not enthused by this argument. So okay, anyway, it's certainly interesting that the Gemara is saying, like, without any hesitation whatsoever, we know where the meat comes from. Like, in other words, how the Gemara knew that and why assume there as opposed to any other place? It's certainly interesting. Now, my Orvim, so the Gemara says, now what does the word Orvim mean? Now, I already told you because, you know, I looked ahead. So it's ravens. I mean, the word Zorav means a raven. We saw back in Parshas Noach, right? That's who Noach sent out. And over here as well, Orvim means raven. So the Gemara tries to be argumentative. Amar Ravina, Orvim Mamish. So before the Gemara gets argumentative. So Ravina says it's ravens. So Amalei Rav Adar Bar Min Yomiv Dilma Trei Gavrei Davishamai Orvim. So the Gemara says, okay, but can it not be that we don't have to look at the Pasuk as super miraculous? Can it just simply be that there was a pair of guys and they happens to be that their names are ravens? Okay. We use the name nowadays. I mean, we. Meaning, it's out there. People are named Raven. I happen not to know one, but...
So interesting that Hashem chooses the
Yeah, right. So, so Miluk.
What was the message there?
No. Miluk, see if the pasuk says, Vayagur, sorry, but Oreva is the Ave. In fact, if you're thinking it's such a strange name, it's not such a strange name. We have the name in the Navin, Shoftim. So someone is actually named Orev. So can we just simply say that it's a person by the name of Orev? Amalei, Yisramik Milsei, Ditarvaya Vishmai Orvim. So he says, okay, but in terms of the level of coincidence that you have two people with this unusual name, that's really unlikely. So the Gemara says, V'dama Shema Kamam. So the Gemara says, okay, but how about this? Would you give me this? Doesn't have to be that the two people are named Orev. All right, that's too strong a coincidence. But can't it be that they came from the town of Orev, and when the Navi's describing the people, not the raven, but the people, they're just simply describing them as the town in which they come from. Can't it be? So the Gemara says, Milok Siva the Aram Yatsu Gidudim Yashu Me'eretz Yashva Na'ara Ketana. Now over here, the Gemara quotes from another incident in Navi, where somebody is being described as Na'ara Ketana. Now, they cannot be those two words describing the same person, because Na'ara and Ketana are two different developmental stages of a girl. V'kashulan karele Na'ara v'karele Ketana, v'amare pedas Ketana demin Ne'urin. So no, the right way to understand is that she is a Ketana, she's a minor, she's from Ne'urin, so the word Na'ara just simply is a description of where she is from. So over here, can we say the same thing? Orvin is just simply a way of describing where they're from. Imkein orvayim mi ba'elei. So the Gemara hits us over the head with a grammar point. And that is that if we were just describing where they were coming from as opposed to what their names actually were, so the Torah would have been clear, the Navi would have been clear and said the word Orvayim. Now, if you want me to explain this to you grammatically, so please find another Rebbe. Okay, my grammar's not good enough where I can explain to you the intricacies of why this means specifically the place where they come from as opposed to the name of the person. Anyway, the Gemara doesn't want to hear from it. The Gemara goes back to the fact that it was actual ravens that brought the food to Eliyahu and others. Okay. Okay, good.
It doesn't change the fact. I mean, whether it's raven or
okay,
people,
fine.
The facts are the same.
Okay, I hear you, but the Gemara just took a little detour to try to see if there's another way to explain it. Lema misayele. So now we still have Ravanan on the table. And he will be on the table until the end of this Amud. Right? The bottom of the Amud is where we're going to close the discussion. Rav Hanan on the table saying that if somebody is a Mormel Avodah Zarah, so he can shecht, again, we're not promoting, but if he shechts and the Shechita was a good Shechita, so we can eat from the Shechita. And he's not treated like an Ovid Avodah Zarah, he's not treated like a guy, and we can eat from the Shechita. That is the position of Rav Hanan. And so far what we had are decent, reasonably good proofs from incidents in Navi. But now the Gemara is going to try to bring in Mishnayos and Brises to see whether or not this is a supportable position. So Lema Misayele, so how about the following? Let's take a look at a Brises together. It's one that we've already seen in yesterday's daf, and we're seeing again in today's daf. Hakol Shochtin. So here, the Brises are very similar to our Mishnah of Hakol Shochtin, but here, as opposed to our Mishnah, this Brises is naming names. Right? In our Mishnah, the Mishnah just simply said it as a category. Everybody could shecht. Here, where the Braisa is specific about who we're coming to include. So who is on the bubble, who are we bringing in into the fold of, yes, they could shecht. Afilu kusiv, afilu arav, afilu yisrael mumar. So over here, three questionable people mentioned the Braisa, spelled out and said that, yes, even they could shecht. The kusi, the arav, the uncircumcised, and the yisrael mumar. These are three people that are included in the list of those who could shecht. Now, let us break down the Braisa. Hi, Arul Hechidami. So we're talking now about an Arul, someone who's uncircumcised. So obviously, we're not talking about an 8-day-old right now at his point in his life, for whatever reason, didn't get circumcised. So he's not called to task at 8 days of age. Obviously. In other words, but for later in life, however, so he discovers that he did not receive a bris milah, and now he's got to make the decision, and admittedly, it's now a difficult decision, but in other words, you need to get a bris milah. So what exactly are we talking about in his refusal? So we're talking about where the reason why he himself did not receive a meal is because he knows that he had older brothers who, unfortunately, Rachmanis, they died in the process of getting a milah. So now the halacha is very clear by baby number three. So baby number three does not get a milah, he's an ones. And the Gemara says, Hai Yisrael Ma'alya. Despite the fact that physically he's uncircumcised, halachically, he is just as Jewish as everybody else. And so as a result of that, the Gemara says, that can't be who we're talking about. Of course, such an individual is allowed to shecht. Yes, he's physically uncircumcised, but ones. So that can't be who the Braisa is talking about. Such an individual is not on the bubble. So the Gemara says, Elapshita mama la arela. So the Gemara says, okay, so he's a mummer. And for whatever reason, his family didn't give him a mila, and he himself decided, you know what? No, thank you. No, thank you. I'm not interested. Not because of a, let's not say he's a mummer lahachis, like we said in the beginning of Shir today. It's a mummer la te'avon, and again, if you know, the right thing, of course, to do is to get a bris mila, but it's certainly inconvenient. I think we can all agree. To say the least, it's inconvenient. So mamar la'arelus. So ema seifa. The Gemara says, okay. So we're talking about a mamar la'arelus. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's go on. V'afil Yisrael mamar. So, but then also in the Braisa, we're talking about Yisrael mamar. So what did we just do? We just described that the arel is a mamar la'arel. So and then the Braisa goes on and talk about Yisrael mamar. It's a hechidami mamar la'davar achad. Hainam mamar la'arelus. Now the Braisa is being repetitive because an arel is a mamar la'arel. So isn't that the same thing as a mamar l'davar echad? I love mamar l'avodas kochav and muchad ravanan. So at the end of the braisa, when it said a mamar, it meant a mamar l'avodas zara, where you might have thought that that is categorically different, and the braisa is there to teach us, no, he's allowed to shecht. And this would be a support for ravanan. The Gemara says the proof is not such a great proof. Lo. La'olam eim l'cham mamar l'avodas kochavim lo. Da'amar mar chamur avodas kochavim shekola kofar ba, kemod b'chol ha'tara kula. So the Gemara says, and again, this goes back to where we started this morning, where I told you the general position of the Gemara is, which is, if you're a mummer for Avodah Zarah, so that's it, you're a kofar b'chol ha'Torah kula. Here, we're saying it, the statement of the Gemara is saying it in the reverse. If you're a kofar ba, if you deny Avodah Zarah, it's kemod b'chol ha'Torah kula. So it's as if you are accepting the entirety of the Torah. It's an inversion of the same point. Meaning Avodah Zarah is tantamount to kol ha'Torah kula. So, if you're a mumma for Avodah Zarah, you are off the map, you're off the reservation, you can't shecht. As far as I understand the Braisa, very simple shot in the Braisa, really simple. You know what the Braisa means when it says at the end a mummer? It means a mummer for Osodavar. He goes and stops in Burger King on the way to the Schlock House. He helps himself to a treif sandwich, and now he gets to the Schlock House, okay. So they, right? You're shechting, that bag in your car? You want to explain it? He's like, sure, I'll explain it. I was hungry. And so it's really amazing. We just think about the Gemara, like play it out in your mind. It's really amazing. But in other words, he's a momalo sodavar. He eats not kosher. But in other words, but okay. But it's l'teyavon. And that's what the Braisa means. That is the Mumla Davar Echad, even if it's Oso Davar, even if it's Tarfus, nevertheless, he's allowed to Shecht. And that's what the Braisa is ending off on. And I certainly understand, even though the Braisa already talked about a Mumla Arel, which is a Mumla Davar Echad, but in our minds, we could have easily made a difference. I understand Mumla Davar Echad, Mila, good, Mila. But over here, we're talking about Mom, she eats treif, and now we're going to let him Shecht. And that's exactly the point of the Braisa.
Only if you check his
knife. And again, like Rava said earlier, right. Correct. Meisvei, the Gemara now is going to be challenging. So far, right now, we have, what do we have on the table for Ravanan? We have seemingly support for him from the Nevi'im, as we went through the Navi and the incidents of Yehoshaphat and Achav, and Eliyahu and Navi eating from Achav's kitchen. We could have a proof from this Braisa, although the Gemara just pointed out it's not a definitive proof. But now the Gemara is going to have a Kasha, and a very strong Kasha. We have the Gemara says, Meisvei, we have a Braisa, Mikem v'lo kulchem. When the Torah introduces us to Karbanos, the Torah says, not all of you bring Karbanos, Mikem. Some of you bring Karbanos and some of you are not bringing Karbanos. Lotzius Amomar. Mikem, Bachem Chalakti V'la Be'umos. Now, as far as where some of you are going to be bringing Karbanos and some of you are not, that's only by Jews. But when it comes to a non-Jew, who wants to bring a Karban? So there's not going to be any kind of questioning, follow-up questioning. Wait one second. You, the non-Jew who wants to bring a Karban, which we've said already numerous times, a non-Jew is certainly allowed to bring a carbon ola to the base of Mikdash. And we're not going to start testing him. Hey, what is your faith system? Are you monotheistic or are you polytheistic? For the non-Jew, it is not going to be a referendum in terms of whether or not he can or cannot bring carbonos. We will always accept the carbon from the non-Jew. V'lo be'umos. Mina behema la'avi b'nei adam shadom lam behema. Now, as far as mina behema is concerned, now, the simple pshat in the Torah is that they're going to bring an animal. The Gemara, the Braisa over here is going one step further in terms of an understanding of the Torah, meaning even if the person is bringing is animalistic in nature, meaning following his Yetzahara, so nevertheless, we're still going to accept his carbon. Mikan, Amru, Mikabim, Karbon, Mi Posh Yisrael, Kidei Shiachsu, Behem Tshuva. Now, as far as Posh Yisrael, let's say a person is bringing a carbon as a Jew and a sinner, so you accept their carbon. and we want to be accepting of them because we want to encourage them to be chozer b'tshuva. There are, however, exceptions to the rule. Chutz min ha-mummer, menase chazayan, mechal shabbos b'farasi. However, if he's a mummer, u'menase chazayan, meaning he's involved in either idolatry or Chal Shabbos before Hesia, public desecration of Shabbos. So at that point in time, even though we want to encourage people coming back to the fold and coming back onto the reservation, not for that, because they are off the chart, no good. Now, before we even ask our question, before we even wrap our head around how this Brisa is problematic to Rav Hanan, let's first and foremost wrap our head around the Brisa. How gufa kasha, the Brisa is difficult. Amar mikem v'lo kuchem, lahotzi es ha-mumar. So on one it says mikem v'lo kuchem, and we're excluding the mumar. That's the opening line of the Brisa. V'hadu tani mikablin karbanos miposhi Yisrael. And then the Brisa tells us, you know, if the person is a sinner, you know, welcome him in and accept the karban. And hopefully he'll be chozer b'tshuva. So the Gemara says, halokasha. Reisha mamal l'chola tarah kula mitziyasa mamal l'davar echad. So the Gemara says, okay, so the obvious distinction is that mamal l'chola tarah kula. So at that point in time, so we do not accept the karban. That's the mikem that we come to exclude. Mamal l'davar echad, please come. Right, we welcome him. We want to encourage him to come, and please come back. And hopefully, he'll be chozer b'tshuva. And mum la davar echad em estefa chutz min amum amnase chasan mechal shabbos b'farayesia. So I hi mum la echadami mum la chal tarah kula hain reisha. Now, when we get to the end of the brisa, so what kind of mum are we talking about? If he's a mum la chal tarah kula, it's already been covered. We don't accept him. And imum la davar echad kashim mitziyasa. If he's a mum only on one area in halacha, so we welcome him with open arms, and we tell him to come back. So alav hachi kamar. The end of the brisa must be understood in the following context. Chutz min ha-mumar l'naseh chesayayin u'lechal shabbosos befar hesia. So good. So we're talking about a mumar who is either an Ovid of a Zara or a Mechal Shabbos befar hesia. So you see over there that even though it's davar echad, nevertheless those are back-breaking mumars. In other words, those avers that he chose, the Avodah Zarah and Shmir Shabbos, so those kinds of mumars are even though one avera, but nevertheless it's tantamount to kolat Torah kula. And so therefore, they are off the reservation. Their karbanos are not going to be accepted. As far as Shabbos is concerned, so we just snuck in Shabbos over here. Meaning our whole discussion over yesterday's daf and today's daf has been mumar l'avodah zarah, and at the end of the brisa, so Shabbos snuck in under the wire. Like, how did Shabbos become part of the discussion? Take a look at the bottom Rashi over here. Not the bottom Rashi, three lines from the bottom. So, el alav hachi kamar mekablan karbanos miposh yisrael, but mumar l'davar echad. Chutz min ha-mumar l'naseh chesayayin l'chal Shabbos. Dehani chamirei. These are more chamar. Ama mumar l'avodos kochavim k'mumar l'chal Torah kula dami. So as far as the conclusion is concerned, so, I mean, the Gemara is going to spell it out in just a moment, but Rashi over here gives it away. You see that a mumar for Avodah Zarah is off the reservation, and therefore it cannot shecht, unlike what Rav Hanan taught us in the beginning of the whole sugya. Good. So that's not going to bode well for Rav Hanan. But in the meantime, however, what about Shabbos? Let's read on in Rashi. Hai tana chamir le Shabbos kavodos kochavim, da'a ovid avodos kochavim kofer b'akarosh baruch hu. If you're ovid avodos zara, so that is in denial of akarosh baruch hu, so that's why it is a backbreaker. It basically puts the person in a momo l'chola Torah kula type of category. And in chol Shabbos, next line of Rashi, v'amechal Shabbos kofer b'masav. And when you're Mechal Shabbos, so basically what you're saying is, you know that story where God created the world in 6 days, rest on the seventh day, nothing doing. Meaning if the person's a Mechal Shabbos, he's showing edus, he's testifying to the fact that no event occurred, it didn't happen, and it's also a kfira in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, explains Rashi. And that's why he's put into the category of, he's totally off the reservation. Okay, interesting, by the way, that for Shabbos, it's Mechal Shabbos Bifar Hesya, and as far as the Avodah Zarah is concerned, doesn't seem to be that way. So why the distinction? It's a wonderful question. I don't have a prepared answer, but in other words, certainly something worthwhile thinking about. Alma, we're back in the Gemara, second line from the bottom. Alma, Momol Avodos Kochavim, Avod Momol L'chol HaTorah Kula, V'tiyufta D'Ravana Tiyufta. And so the Gemara says, okay, now we're at the end of the Sugya, and the Gemara says, and we do not support Rav Hanan. And the Gemara now has disproved the position of Rav Hanan. When a person is a mummer for Avodah Zarah, even if it's only Avodah Zarah, nevertheless, it's ke'ilu, he's a mummer l'chol HaTorah Kula, and the Shechita is not going to be a good Shechita. And then, of course, you have to go back over the entire sugya, and you got to revisit the whole story, is the incidents of Yehoshaphat and Achav, and Yehoshaphat is eating from the Shechita of Achav and Achav's kitchen. Eliyahu, we already answered up, meaning that was Al Pi HaDibur, so that's different. But you have to go back to Yehoshaphat Nachav, and you got to revisit it, and you got to answer up one, differently in terms of how Yehoshaphat is eating over there. Now the Gemara, after having its conclusion, the Gemara now notes it's not the only brisa that tells us that if you're a mummer for avodah zarah, it's no good. We have other brises as well. As we now turn to the top of Hamad Beis, me'am aretz prat la'mummer. So me'am aretz is coming to exclude a mummer. Rabbi Shimon ben Yosi, Amar Mishum Rabbi Shimon, Asher lo so asana bishkagav ve'ashem, hashav miyadiyaso mevi karban al shigigaso, and hashav miyadiyaso eino mevi karban al shigigaso. If, let's say, you were told, hey, you know what that is? That's chalev, don't eat it. And you hear that and you're like, oh yeah, you're right. Oh, I totally forgot. So if you're shav miyidiyaso, if you would have retracted from doing the avera because you would have known better, so then if you mistakenly ate the chalev, so you bring a carbon. Otherwise, no, we don't accept a carbon from you. In other words, you're a mummer. In other words, if you wouldn't have stopped eating it, even having known what it was and that it was usur, so then we would not accept a carbon from you. From this brice, it's clear, both from the Tanakhama and from Rabbi Shimon, that if the person is somebody who is going to be rejecting averus, he's not going to be compliant with the Isurim in the Torah, so he can't bring a carbon. And presumably, if he can't bring a carbon, his shechita also is not going to be good shechita. Now, as far as the brice is concerned, the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon are basically making the same point. So the Gemara wants to know, what is, there has to be a subtle difference between them, otherwise they wouldn't be arguing. So the Gemara says, let's say, as far as chalev is concerned, by all means, he's more than happy to help himself to eating chalev. He loves chalev. But as far as other Yisurim are concerned, like dam, for example, and the Gemara specifically chose over here chalev and dam, because the two Yisurim do present themselves in the same pasuk. So the person over here is literally picking and choosing within the same pasuk. Chalev, oh, that I eat. Dam, oh, no, that I don't eat. So let's say, for example, he ate dam by accident, and now are we ready to accept from him a carbon on dam? So the Gemara says, that's the difference between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon. But in the meantime, however, they are both operating with the basic principle that if the person is a mummer, so we don't accept his karbanos. So the Gemara says, you're right. There are, in fact, two sources that speak out this halacha, but the Gemara wants to note that these two sources are necessary because one is talking about where we don't accept a carbon ola from him. That's the mikem of the Amud Aleph today, and the drasha that we just learned, me'am ha'aretz, that some people bring carbonos, but some people do not. And that's in Perek Dalet, that's by carbon chatas. And I need a drasha both by carbon ola and by carbon chatas. Why? Because if it was a carbon chatas, I understand. Don't accept it from him, because that's for people who are in need of kapara. This person's in need of a kapara, but for people who mistakenly violate the Torah. He didn't mistakenly violate the Torah, so for him, no kapara. You want to bring a gift? Okay, let him bring a gift. And in other words, if I only had a drush and perek dalid, I might have thought, for an ola, for a daron, let him give a gift. And if I only had the drasha by carbon ola, I would have said, look, don't take a carbon ola from him, but if he wants to bring a carbon chatas as a way of repairing his relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, so that you should let him bring. So tzricha, that's why I need a drasha both by the carbon ola and by the carbon chatas, that we're not accepting a carbon from either if they are in fact a mummer. Now, the Gemara earlier noted that if the person is acting animalistic, so we still accept the carbon from him, which means that the word behema is understood as a pejorative term, to which the Gemara says, is that right? The Gemara quotes the pasuk from Tehillim. And over there, when the Torah is describing a person like an animal, it means it in a complementary sense. The person is, on one hand, arumim bedas. They're very wise people. And as far as the way they behave, they are humble and humble and with humility. And they basically not like an animal in terms of urge and impulse, but basically very quiet and unassuming. So the Gemara says, Hasam ksiv, Adam ubehema, acha behema lechudei ksiv. So the Gemara says, well, you have to look at it contextually. If it says Adam ubehema, so there the word behema is meant over there as a complementary term. But if it just simply says behema by itself, that is not complementary, but just the opposite. So the Gemara says, okay, but I have a pasuk over here which describes both Adam and Behema, and over there in the context of that pasuk, it sounds very clear that that is meant as a derogatory statement. So hasam hachilka akra zera Adam l'chud v'zera Behema l'chud. So the Gemara says, yeah, but over there it doesn't say Adam u Behema. It actually breaks it up. So that's why it is not meant in a complementary sense. Amar Rav Chanan, Amar Rav Yaakov bar Idi, Amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi Mishum bar Kapara, Rabbi Gamliel beis Dino, Nimnu al Shchitas Kusi v'Asura. And so now the Gemara is going to be arriving at a conclusion by the Kusi. So can the Kusi shech? So just earlier this morning we saw the Braisa that said yes. The last number of days since the beginning of the Masechta, Abayin and Rava said yes. In terms of what you need, do you need Omer Agabav? Do you need Yotze v'Nechnas? Okay, those are good questions and important questions. But in other words, but fundamentally the Kusi can shech. And now we're moving on historically to the basin at Rabbi Gamliel. And who are we talking about historically? Rashi writes over here, we're talking about the son of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Rashi writes, I'm reading the Rashi, Rabbi Gamliel. Benosha Rabbi Yehuda Anasi Shaya Min Achronim. Ubeis Dinu Nimno Al Shchitas Kusi La'achr Shenishnes Mishnasenu Dehakol Shochtim V'afilu Kusi V'asrua. So in other words, just one generation earlier. So Rebbe and his generation were accepting of a kusi. Remember, we just read a brisa. The brisa said that a kusi is allowed to shecht. And so now we're moving one generation, and this is now where we hit the finality of the kusi. And here's the end of the story vis-a-vis can a kusi shecht. So Rabbi Gamliel is based and said no. So Amalei Rabbi Zerula Rabbi Yaakov Rabbi Shema Lo Shama Rabbi Ela B'Shen Yisom Omer Al Gabav. Well, maybe that's only when unsupervised. Maybe that is what they meant. So Amalei Dami Haika Rabbanan Kedlo Gemir Inshi Shmaisa B'Shen Yisom Omer Al Gabav Lameim Rabai. So the Gemara says, now it appears to me as if you never learned. Okay, I understand a strong response, a strong retort, but the point being over here is that, no, I can't accept that. You mean to tell me that the entire vote in that particular Beis Din was where it was unsupervised? Meaning I didn't need that. We know that there is some requirement of supervision. So Kibla Mine Olo Kibla Mine. So the Gemara now wants to know. Now, was this accepted or was this not accepted? Tashma, Da'amar Rabbi Nachman, Bar Yitzhak, Amar Rav Asi, Ani Reisis, Rabbi Yochanan, Shachal, Mishchitas Kusi. Av Rabbi Asi, Achal, Mishchitas Kusi. Now, the Gemara over here says to find Amorayim, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Asi, who lived after the period of Rabbi Gamliel, so their eating and their shochtim happened to have been kusim. So the Gemara says, V'tayba Rabbi Zera, Lo Shamina Luhu. So, D'i Av Shamina Luhu, Av Mekabalei. So here are your two options. Either number one, Rabbi Gamliel came out, issued a psak, and they just simply didn't know about it. And had they known about it, they wouldn't have eaten. Is the shochtim ben kusim. Or, that's option number one, or option number two, is that they knew about it, they heard about it, but they simply didn't accept it. Now this is harder for me to explain, meaning Rabbi Gamliel was a nasi, and he had a psak, and it was issued from his court. And so over here, these Amoraim are hearing the psak, and they're not accepting it. Mm. Okay, I admittedly, it's difficult for me to try to explain that. But the Gemara now is presenting that as one of the sides, and the Gemara says, and not only are we accepting it as one of the sides, that's the better argument to make. I have an easier time hearing that Rabbi Yochanan, Rav Asi, were fully aware of the Pesach of Rabbi Gamliel and simply didn't accept it. In other words, it was not an accepted view. Now, the Isa Kadach Lo Shmi Alu, because let's go over the alternative being that, yes, there was a psak that was issued. Yes, it was, in fact, a definitive ruling, and Rav Yochanan and Rav Asi just didn't know about it. The Gemara is saying this. I have a harder time accepting that viewpoint. You mean to tell me that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would allow these tzaddikim, Rav Yochanan, Rav Asi, would allow these tzaddikim to eat something which is not halachically acceptable? Remember the donkey of Rav Pinchas ben Ya'ir, where the Gemara later on is going to remind us. So if you don't remember, that's fine. In a little bit of time from now, we're going to get a reminder. So you don't remember that the donkey of Rav Pinchas ben Ya'ir was not allowed to eat treif. And you're going to tell me that Rav Yochanan and Rav Asi, these Amorayim, are going to be eating treif unknowingly? No. In other words, they knew of the psak. They just said they reject the psak. The Gemara says, I have a really difficult time understanding, or I should say accepting, that a psak was issued and they just didn't hear about it. And had they heard about it, so they of course wouldn't have eaten it. The Gemara says, I have a difficult time with that. Tomorrow we begin with Tosfos on the bottom of the Amud, where the Gemara says very clearly, unequivocally, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects his tzaddikim to make sure that they don't do averus. And is that universally true? So we'll start off with Tosfos tomorrow morning.